Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle, also known as The Phil Nason Show. And I'm happy to have you here on this Thursday afternoon, February the 7th, 2013. 1 week to go to Valentine's Day, boys and girls. You better get that package ready because your honey is going to expect something more than a text message. or a booty call, or whatever else you think you can get away with in the real world known as love. Anyhow, I'll tell you something. Yesterday's show, a lot of fun. Tuesday's show still bringing me a lot of the blues. You know, I'm just answering people's questions, trying to be truthful, trying to be straight up, and whatever else. And it seems as though folks just want to burn my house down. You know something? I don't really care where Piers Morgan lives, works, or even what he says, to be honest with you. I'm just answering a question. That's all. Relax. It's all good. It's all good. We all have better things to talk about than Piers Morgan, someone who doesn't even matter in American politics, American culture, or any culture for that matter. Anyhow, what does matter is our Thursdays. And joining me on the line, as always, each and every Thursday from thesportsgoons.com, please welcome Mr. Jamian Smith to the Phil Nason Show. Jamian, what's up, dude? How are you today?
Hey, man. What's going on? I'm doing fine. Beautiful day here in Atlanta. Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here. I'll tell you what. We got lots to talk about today. Just a ton, actually. A ton to talk about. One of the things, I got to say this, the Super Bowl, and I was really fired up to watch the Super Bowl this year. Really fired up. And the power went out. And it knocked out the stream, so I had to stop watching. And I had to go and get it, or actually get to watch the second half by alternative measures the following day. But later I discovered that Beyonce is the reason why the power went out. Was her performance that hot?
I mean, she set it on fire, man. I mean, she took all the energy and everything from the from the Super Bowl. It was just crazy. Like, her performance was like a live concert. I mean, that would look like. And I don't remember the Superdome having such an elaborate concert Super Bowl halftime performance every time Super Bowl is played in the Superdome. Then it goes on with everything else, with the sellout crowd. I mean, everything was going on. Then the lights just went out. It was crazy, like a power surge. It just flicked, and everybody, and then nobody knew what was going on, man. But the fans, I commend the fans of New Orleans. They did pretty good with it. Nobody was acting crazy. It was just weird because you've never seen that before.
Well, you know what I thought? At first, I thought another hurricane hit. Ooh. That's what I thought. It looked sort of like it did when it was a rescue shelter. But seriously, though, Beyonce, when she was rehearsing, doing the sound checks and stuff, she had knocked out the power twice before.
Oh, I did not know that.
Okay, well, here's some more thing you didn't know, maybe. Boomer Esiason was doing the radio broadcast for CBS Sports, and they were up at the very top of the radio row where they do these things, where they do the broadcasts for the sound and everything. Anyhow, his partner, and I can't think of who it is.
Kevin Harlan.
There you go, Kevin Harlan. Yep, bravo. He said, Boomer, do you hear that sizzling? And Boomer took off his headphones and goes, yeah. And all of a sudden, the lights went out. So what their producer did, and God bless him, he was smart. He picked up a landline phone and, hey, we can call in New York from this. So they did 30 minutes of broadcasting with telephones. And then Boomer couldn't get back down to do the CBS show he was supposed to do. Because he was stuck up there because the elevators didn't work. So he had to stay up there. But she knocked out the power twice before. Now, don't you think they would have tried to figure it out?
Yeah. I did not know that the power went out twice before during rehearsals with her doing that. Something should have scaled back. It wasn't like when it was in Dallas Cowboys Stadium that you had unlimited light. I mean, you had unlimited power or whatever. Yeah, you're right. Something should have been done. Should have been more precaution. I'd have told her to, like, we got to take back some of this stuff or scale it down or cut some of the performance. Her performance went 30 minutes. Then the delay went another 30 minutes. It was almost an hour without football. Well, I take it back. After halftime, you know, the Ravens, they scored off a kickoff return. Then the 49ers ran two plays, and that was it. So within an hour and a half, we had maybe three plays of football. So I think somebody should have, if it went out once, okay, all right. Okay, we'll see. We just monitored freak accident. It went out twice. Okay, we really need to look at this now. Make sure it don't happen during the biggest game of the year. So I thought whoever's in charge of the of that, they should have did a better job of, you know, having precaution of that. The Superdome was not built yesterday. It was built a long time ago. So who knows that it could have stood all of that.
Well, you know what? At least somebody in the Beyonce Knowles family can turn out the lights, because her husband's basketball team sure can't. Anyway, because they got their hats handed to them by the Lakers last night. I thought that was kind of funny.
My goodness.
Well, he's a tough kid. Anyway, right off the Lakers too quick, y'all. But anyway, we're not going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about the Super Bowl in more in depth in the next segment. But you know what else I saw today? And this, I don't even know why this is news, but why not? Because we kind of can crack on this a little bit. Manti Te'o has decided to indefinitely leave Twitter. Now, why should ESPN write an article about it, and why should anyone care?
I have no clue. I mean, he should have left Twitter a long time ago. Twitter is what the hell got him in this foolishness. The best thing to do was back away from Twitter. I mean, I don't know why they had to make article, announcement, or speech or this that he's leaving Twitter. Just leave. Nobody would know that you're not there. They'll still try and tag you and stuff, but I mean, you don't have to answer. You don't have to do none of that. I don't know why they had to make a big deal of it.
You know, he ought to leave the internet indefinitely, completely. Yeah. Not just Twitter, but the whole mess, because he certainly isn't very mature enough to handle it. And it's sad that he got kind of catfished, though, but he fell for it. And you just told me before this broadcast that it looks like the Baltimore Ravens are interested in him. Now, how does he fit into that mix?
Well, it's just crazy. I love the draft process. I love going on different blogs, going on different websites with mock drafts. NFL mock drafts are very hot at this time of the year, and they're going to continue to see a whole lot of them between now and April with the draft. But anyway, most of the drafts I have seen, Manti Te'o, back in December before the national championship, he was a guaranteed top 10 pick. Then after the national championship, he fell mid-first round with a lot of people had him going. Then when this foolishness hit, he started to fall some more. Well, there's a team that will be missing the middle linebacker next year. And coincidentally, they just won the Super Bowl, and they need to free up some cap space. So instead of them going to sign a middle linebacker, Manti Te'o may be there for the Baltimore Ravens at the end of the first round, which I think would be a steal for them.
Yep. He would be perfect for them, because they don't really care about how gullible you are or how naive you are or how much trouble or foolishness you get into, as long as you can play football. And I think it'd be perfect for him. And I wish him the best, because quite frankly, he needs a little good luck, because he hasn't had very much of it recently. That's for sure. All right. You know what? What we're going to do, Jay, is we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And when we return, we're going to get into that Super Bowl.
Okay, cool.
All right. You're listening to the Phil Nason Show, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Phil Nason Show on these amazing affiliates. Right back.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine, as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for, at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations at ArediHotel.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit PhilNasons.com.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show, the February 7th, 2013 edition. I'm really fired up to bring this show to you today. And you know something? The Super Bowl was amazing. I enjoyed that football game. I enjoyed that football game more than I enjoyed any other football game in a long time. And I enjoyed this Super Bowl far more than I have enjoyed any in a long, long time. I tell you, I really enjoyed watching this football game. Jamian, what did you think? What were your thoughts about the Super Bowl? Where did you watch the game?
Well, our good buddy Gerard Wilkerson, I went over to his house. He had a little get-together, a little gathering. So I went over to his house and watched the game. From the first half, it looked like it was going to get ugly real quick. It did get ugly, matter of fact. Joe Flacco looked like what he said he was last year in April, that he was the best quarterback in football, that he looked like. It just seemed like the 49ers, they were just happy to be there, and the Ravens were looking to win. Flacco was throwing the ball good. Caldwell was calling a great game as the offensive coordinator. Their defense had Kaepernick shook. He turned the ball over a couple of times. Randy Moss was I don't know what Randy Moss was doing. Just looked like he just needed to go away for a long time. It just looked like John Harbaugh had the Ravens better prepared to play that football game in the first half. Then, like we said in the first segment, the lights went out. Then all of a sudden, the San Francisco 49ers decided to show up in New Orleans. Then we had ourselves a great football game. So it was a pretty good game. It wasn't the best I've seen in a minute. Last year's Super Bowl was pretty good. I have to say the Super Bowl between the first Giants and Patriots, that was the best one. And that Arizona-Pittsburgh game was a pretty good one as well. But it was a good football game. Had you on the edge of your seat. You had a controversy at the end. Was it pass interference? Was it holding? Good no call. Me personally think it was a good no call. Michael Crabtree, he initiated the contact and gave up on the route. So, hey, it is what it is. Referees couldn't call it at the end of the game.
You know, that's just it. And we'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, the thing is they were crying about the replacement referees. And do you remember what I said the day they came back? Because you were on air with me. I said, watch, it won't take long before someone cries about the real ones too, because they cry about referees no matter what. Yep. They let these guys play all night long in the defensive backfields. So what did you expect? And Chris Carter, he said something on an interview that I heard. He says, listen, the receiver ran the wrong route, a bad route. He should have moved in and then out.
Yep.
And he would have gotten the ball right where he wanted it. But instead, he ran right into the hold, and the referee made a good no call. But I'll tell you something right off the bat. You know, you talk about prepared teams, and I'm not so sure who was better prepared, but I can tell you this. That first penalty on third down in the red zone with the offsides penalty, the defensive offside jumped. Incomplete pass, should have been fourth down. They should have been kicking a field goal. Instead, Flacco throws it in the end zone for six. Now, that should have been, and then right after that, there was a fumble. And then that bad face mask call. Mm-hmm. And now instead of a score being 3-3 and perhaps some chess moves in between the 40s, it's 14-3 Baltimore right off the bat. And that set the tone. That's really what killed San Francisco, is that very first quarter, that very first two or three possessions between the two of them killed them, I thought. What did you think about that?
Yeah, you're exactly right, man. Those first two possessions, man, it just looked like they looked like how they did last 2 weeks ago against Atlanta. But this time they wasn't playing the Falcons, they were playing the Ravens. Okay, so the 49ers are gonna make a run, but they cannot. They have done that this year. They have dug themselves a hole. They got to find a way to get ahead of folks next season and continue to push the throat on them. But the play that I remember the most, the play that really set the tone, was the fake field goal by John Harbaugh and the Raiders. Justin Tucker almost had it. Jim Harbaugh better be glad that he got a guy named Patrick Willis to run that play out and to let the other guy come and tackle him and stop him 1 yard short. A lot of people say, well, they didn't get it. It was a bad guy. I liked it. It was a chess move. It said, he basically said, brother, we're going to beat you. I'm going to put my throat on you. I don't care that we're brothers. Okay, I'm here to win. So that set the tone. And it turned out, man, it just like a momentum thing. Even though the 49ers did not the Ravens did not score on that play, but the 49ers had the ball. They punted it back. And what's the next play that happened? A 56-yard ball to Jacoby Jones, who made the Culliver guy. We need to talk about Culliver, too. Just made him look silly in that game.
Yeah, that was ballsy, that field goal attempt, that fake field goal.
Yeah.
And you could almost see it, too. You could see it coming, and it was hilarious. But, you know, the thing is he's selling them. You know something? I'm not gonna kick this thing. I'm not going to miss and give you field goal or good field position with a little bit of time left. I'm going to stick it in your backside. And that's what he did. It was better than a punt and far better than the missed field goal. And that is what could have happened. But that was ballsy, man. When I saw that, I was like, wow, that's pretty good. You know, that's called being ballsy in a Super Bowl. That's what it's all about. Going after it, going after the other team. Chess moves. Great move. But I'll tell you the other thing that really cracked me up all week was Randy Moss talking all this, I'm the greatest receiver of all time. Well, he had a chance to prove it, but Reed picked that ball off in the second quarter. And you know something, it was thrown over the middle. It was a little bit high. But Randy Moss didn't even try to get that ball. He didn't want to try to catch that ball because he would have got clocked. Now, one of the greater receivers, like say a Chris Carter or a Jerry Rice, they would have went up and tried to fetch that ball. And that's the difference. See, Randy Moss, he didn't want no part of that. And instead, it went for a pick. I mean, it was incredible. But Randy Moss talking all that mess, and, well, what did you think of his status now? Because he's probably done with football. I think he's probably going to retire. Where does he fit into the scheme of things in terms of greatness?
Well, I'm a Randy Moss fan. I'm all the Randy Moss backer. And I supported him on his claims. Last week, but he made me look like a complete butt. Randy Moss need to go away for a long time. I think that what happened, let me tell you one reason he checked out of that game. If you remember, like you talked about that first field goal, the 49ers had a chance to score a touchdown, which is in the first quarter, I believe, but they had a penalty something else. But when Kaepernick rolled out, he threw it to Michael Crabtree when he was under pressure, and Crabtree blocked it dropped it, or somebody deflected it. But you know who was right behind Crabtree, wide open, who couldn't catch the deflection, but he wanted the ball? Randy Moss. So I think when he didn't get the ball in that first quarter, he checked out of the game. He was done. He's like, you're not going to throw me the ball, I'm wide open? Okay, all right, we'll see. And that play with the Ed Reed interception, that was piss poor at best, man. That was terrible. He didn't even try to deflect it. He didn't try to do nothing. He just, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. Then another play in the game, Kerry Williams, instead of Randy Moss coming back to the ball, he just let Kerry Williams jump in front of him and almost have another interception that really could have been the backbreaker. So where did he go as great? Me personally, I mean, outside of that game, I still got him as number two. A lot of people got T.O. at number two. I still got him at number two behind Jerry Rice. That game, I mean, he was at the end of his career. He'd been doing this all season long. But Randy Moss, he embarrassed himself on Sunday. He embarrassed himself on Sunday. I will say that.
Well, you know the play that you described where Crabtree tipped it? You know, don't forget, Kaepernick was running to his right, and he was throwing across his body. You know, that's not an easy throw to make.
No, it's not. I don't think he saw him.
That was my point exactly. How could he see him? He was about to get clocked. You know, Randy Moss still could have caught that ball.
Yeah.
But he didn't. But, you know, the other thing that struck me in the first half anyway was that San Francisco's red zone offense was just pathetic. When you get the ball in the red zone, especially in a Super Bowl, you don't get three, you get six. And they just couldn't get it done, could they?
No, they couldn't. Baltimore is a veteran-led defense. That pistol foolishness, they had a game plan for it. They was hitting Kaepernick every time he dropped back, whether he had the ball or not. They was going to make Frank Gore beat him. They was not going to let Kaepernick. As you've seen, Kaepernick has not gotten off like he's supposed to ever since that the Green Bay game. If they watched that Green Bay film, they made sure Kaepernick, they got to make Frank Gore as the primary runner. And Haloti Ngata, he got injured in that game, but when Haloti Ngata was in that game, he was stuffing that thing up. It was not getting any kind of penetration from the offensive side of the ball. And you're right, it made it cause Kaepernick, even though he's accurate, but in short yard situation, he don't have that, you know, that touch. That he's not there yet when it comes to short yard situation. Cause you can look in the red zone, you can look at a Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, you know they're gonna get six through the arm. Kaepernick is not there yet. You know, they got to do some funky things, some counters, some reverses. People got to be wide open, like we talked about just a few minutes ago with the Crabtree and Randy Moss situation. But give credit to the Ravens defense, man, for stuffing that.
Yeah, and then before the second half, first half ended, you know, this play, and I was taking notes, as you can probably tell.
Yeah.
Jacoby Jones, man, and this is what I wrote. I'm going to just read you exactly what I wrote. Jacoby Jones just made the play of the game. He makes a great double move. He gets behind the D, catches the ball, falls down untouched, and takes it to the house on third down. And then I had to put my little dash, 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 dash. And then I put like this, Jay. Then one-ups himself with a 108-yard kickoff return for six to start the second half. That New Orleans kid went big, didn't he?
Yeah, I love Jacoby Jones. He went to a HBCU. He went to Lane, third-round draft pick. And the Houston Texans missed him. They miss him big time. They let him go. He went to Baltimore, and he's done great things for John Harbaugh. Me personally, I love Jacoby Jones. I love him when he scored a touchdown because he got the best touchdown dance in the NFL, the Chopper City Juke. I loved it. But also on that play, number 29, I think his name Chris Culliver for the 49ers. If you remember, Culliver during the media day, along with Randy Moss Foolishness, pretty much told a radio station that he don't like gay people and there's no gay. He was just talking about gay people and whatever, not on his team, and just that made light of the situation about, about gay people. Well, he was embarrassed that whole game. Jacoby Jones made him look like a slap fool on that bomb. He caught the ball, fell, got up, shook him, and beat him to the house, man. So I was happy to see that because Culliver is an idiot, and I like Jacoby Jones.
Yeah, you know what? And I'll tell you this before we get in the second half, or after that kickoff. I guess I just started the second half for us. But I honestly believe that Jacoby Jones should have been the MVP. And not to take anything away from Joe Flacco. Let's go back to Joe Flacco first. Did Joe Flacco silence his critics on Sunday?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. What did you think he did better than he's done all year?
He took that next step. He's took that step. He's gone from a third-tier quarterback to a second-tier quarterback. Not quite. Now, he called himself elite, I mean, which is true, but he's not up there with the Breeze, Rodgers, Brady, and Manning yet. He's right there with the Big Ben. He's right there with the Eli Mannings, the Stafford. He's above. He's right in there with them. But he took that. He showed that they can win the game with him, okay? He showed that they can win the college at first. He had to knock that the Ravens were losing games because of him in the playoffs. Even though they went to the playoffs, it wasn't because of him. The Ravens won those games. They went on the road to Mile High. They went to Foxborough in the Super Bowl, even beat Andrew Luck because of Joe Flacco. It was Joe Flacco team, even though Ray Lewis was the mascot and it was his Super Bowl, yada, yada, yada. But Joe Flacco was the X factor in that game, and he made them pay. He made some big-time throws to Anquan Boldin and Jacoby Jones and Dennis Pitta. He's finally using those weapons Isaac Newsom has gave him. He has took that next step. He's silenced those critics. And now he wants to be the highest-paid quarterback in the NFL. I mean, so Isaac Newsom has a decision. He got a lot of key free agents. I think a lot of them won't be back because Isaac Newsom is a great guy at drafting. So he would draft those replacements. And I think they would give Joe Flacco what he wants. But, yes, he has took that next step. Now, whether he has to be consistent is one thing. He has not been consistent in his career. But a lot of guys have been that way. But this playoff push, this playoff run he had – has impressed me. So God bless Joe Flacco. And it's funny in the Goons, man, because him and Matt Ryan, they got drafted the same year. So now people looking at Matt Ryan like, okay, so what's up? You got Joe Flacco winning Super Bowls, and you can't get to a Super Bowl. So I think it's he's leaped ahead of Matt Ryan, me personally. He's took that next step.
Yeah, I think so. You know what, though? Here's what he said after the game. They said, well, what does that mean in terms of how your season went? And he says, look, we played 20 games. I threw 10 interceptions. I'm lousy? Think about it. He did everything right. He didn't make any mistakes. And even if he did, we can't even remember them. I'm sure the most critical eye can find some. I still think Jacoby Jones should have been the MVP, but usually goes to quarterbacks. The only thing I'm going to disagree with what you said is that Eli Manning is an elite quarterback. He has two MVPs. Once you do it twice, you got my number. You have my attention. But now let's get into the second half. Now the hurricane comes, the lights go out. Hurricane Beyonce hit, and the lights went out. Boom, boom, boom. Out go the lights. You remember that song?
Yeah.
Oh, you do. Oh, that a boy. I'm so proud of you. Anyway, you know something, because usually when I do these things, folks don't remember, but you know, or don't know, because they're too young to remember that song. But anyway, I have to tell you, the second half was all San Francisco. And here's the other thing. If you only read the stat sheet at the end of the football game, you would think, and not the score, you would think that the San Francisco 49ers destroyed the Baltimore Ravens, wouldn't you?
Yep. They did whatever they wanted to the Ravens in the second half. That thing called momentum, it is something. Because the momentum after that blackout went straight to the San Francisco 49ers. Ray Rice does what he's been doing all season, and well, not season, the postseason, fumbled the ball. I mean, he killed a couple of drives, Ray Rice, and they went with Bernard Pierce on that last drive that they get them in field goal range. Because if I believe Ray Rice was in there again, he probably would have fumbled again. But they had to do something to try and get that momentum going, because Frank Gore was getting it going, Vernon Davis was getting it going, and a heck of a grab. Michael Crabtree, I would be the first to admit, the quarterback change from Adam Smith to Kaepernick has benefited Michael Crabtree the most, because he was teetering towards bust. But when Kaepernick came in, he has showed his potential. He has showed what he can do. And that touchdown grab he made showed why the 49ers picked him. You were right. You look at the stats, man. It was crazy how the 49ers dominated that third quarter after that delay, man. It was crazy. Like the Ravens were still in the locker room, and the 49ers was out there playing by themselves.
Well, you know what? Also, keep in mind that they didn't have much to lose at that point. Because after that second touchdown, after that 108-yard just missile, and that's what it was. He reminded me of the rocket there for a moment. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much curtains at that point. And I wasn't even that upset when the power went out, because I said, oh, well, I'll just go to sleep because this thing's going to be over for real. The couple things that did stand out in the second half for me, that was one of the stupidest things I ever saw, was when Brown ran into the kicker and got that penalty. I mean, he ran into Akers. Akers missed the freaking thing, and that was debatable, by the way. You have to look at about four different angles, I guess. But then what did he do? He got another chance and he nailed it. Very similar situation to the very first quarter when that offside penalty allowed Baltimore to score 7. That kept San Francisco in there, I thought. But then, and the rest of it was just all San Francisco, really, and Baltimore, honestly, in my opinion, just hanging on, right?
Yeah. Baltimore, let me tell you this. Baltimore did a good job of bending and not breaking, because the 49ers, they had two shots. Like I said, David Akers, that field goal, that whole situation. The 49ers should have scored a touchdown then, and the 49ers really should have scored a touchdown at the end of the game to go on top. But I commend the Ravens for the bend, don't break mentality that they had, because they felt the momentum going. They saw the 49ers, what they was doing. They had a little pep in the step, and they was beating them from pillar to pole. But the bend, don't break happened, and it came at the right time. So, like we talked about the red zone, by kicking field goals. In the Super Bowl, you're exactly right. In the Super Bowl, field goals not going to win you the game. Touchdowns are. And that's what the difference of the game, a field goal, 34-31. So we have to So that's what the difference was. I commend the Ravens for the bend don't break. Like I said, Colin Kaepernick, when the pressure came, he looked like a, I want to say a rookie because he's really not technically not a rookie, but he looked like a guy who started 10 games at the quarterback position. He didn't know how to check down the blocks or anything. When the Ravens just said, forget it, we're just going to go straight up the middle. We're just going to go straight up the middle. We're going to get you. And that's what they did. When they went straight up the middle, Kaepernick just had to get the ball away and couldn't set his feet right. And the Ravens did a great job.
They most certainly did, didn't they? And you know what, Colin Kaepernick, I got to admit, he has a strong arm. The thing is, Phil Simms said this about 5 or 6 times in a row, and it was really interesting to hear him say this. He said, even if that kid couldn't run, he'd still be a quarterback in the NFL because that guy has a shotgun of an arm. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this whole pistol offense? How long do you think it's going to survive, Jay? Because quite frankly, I have my doubts. I mean, these guys, you're going to get these kids killed after 2 or 3 years. Look at RG3. He lasted a year.
Yeah. The great rapper Craig Mack. I don't know if you know Craig Mack or not, but he was in the mid-90s.
I do not know him. No, I'm sorry.
Okay. He had a song called Flavor in the Year. But he had a line in that song called, you won't be around next year. And I don't think this pistol spread foolishness is not going to be. You make a great point. I've been saying it, man. This Kaepernick, he can be a great quarterback without having to do all that duking and jiving. We saw the Wildcat, how that didn't work, the run and shoot, that didn't work. Gimmick offenses don't win championships. Okay? When you got to play a real offense, man, run the ball and throw the ball down the field, this fake handoff. Because all that, like you said, all that's going to do is get them killed. All that's going to do is get them injured. Because Terrell Suggs, none of those guys, they were tearing off on Kaepernick. It was sort of like, we don't care what Frank Gore's going to do. We're going to make sure you don't beat us. And that's what's going to be the game plan with all these quarterbacks doing this spread option, this run, fake, pistol, whatever you want to call this gimmick stuff. They're going to hit the quarterback because it's legal. You are putting your quarterback in danger when you're doing that. And coaches have to look at that. RG3 got a torn ACL, even though the play that he got hurt on wasn't really a spread option thing, but he initially heard it. But later in that Seattle game, they was hitting RG3 left and right. You're going to get your quarterback killed. Quarterback's going to have a short lifespan in the NFL by doing this offense, man. So I don't think he's going to be around. Even though some mobile quarterbacks like my man EJ Manuel and others are going to be coming out, but I think they're going to have to modify this thing to have them throw it more than run them keep it and run them because they're going to get hurt. Big time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, these kids, it's impossible. Like you said, you know, they get hit then. And that's what these defensive players want to do is knock their bonnet off. When they see them out in the open and they're not going down, see ya. And that's why they call it the not for long. The NFL, not for long. But goodness, what a football game. And I'll tell you what, the end wasn't too bad either. First of all, I got to say this. Another great call by John Harbaugh when they took that safety.
Yeah.
It killed 8 seconds of the clock, prevented a punt return. Uh-huh. But I'll tell you what, that killed the Gamblers. Y'all should have listened to the Flash. You never listen to the Flash. What did I tell you? Leave 4-point spreads alone. How many times I got to tell you this? Leave 4-point spreads alone. Take the home dog like Phil did. And he was a very happy camper when he woke up on Monday morning. Trust me. But anyhow, the thing is, they should have done this. And here's what people were screaming about on Facebook and Twitter. We could have almost ran a Facebook Fugazi bit off this one. They were crying about why weren't they calling a holding penalty? Should they have added a few seconds to the clock and called a holding penalty? Why, yes, they should have. But unfortunately, they didn't. And this is the thing about these fake punts and taking a safety. This is what they're taught to do is hold. They want to stop the clock. Don't kill these people for holding. That's what they were doing. It was really silly, but I thought it was another great call. He made 2 great calls, that fake field goal and taking that safety. What do you think?
Yeah, great call. Like, what is he? Because some people don't watch football or don't know football. Like, what is he doing? Why is he running around? What is he doing? Justin Tucker, like, he wanted to run back to the locker room. He wasted all that time, and you know, with the because you get the choice of the kickoff or the free punt. So when they punted it, the clock runs when you punt. So when he punted, the clock was running. So the only thing the 49ers could do was the Music City Miracle Part 2, and that didn't happen because Ted Ginn Jr. got tackled. Smart play call. I mean, both of those guys are great coaches. Jim Harbaugh and John Harbaugh are great coaches. I will say this. That was probably the best coach game that I have seen in a long time. I mean, both of them pulling out stops, both of them going back and forth. That was a heck of a coach. And you felt Jim Harbaugh's pain. At the same time, you felt the joy of John Harbaugh when that game was over with. Because both guys coached their tails off. It was like, I don't care, you're my brother. I'm trying to win. I'm trying to beat you. And I just commend hats off to both. But that was a good call by John Harbaugh. Because if he had to just not take the safety and just punt it, then who knows what would have happened. That was too much time left. Who knows? Kaepernick got a shotgun over gone. Who knows? Randy Moss would have woke up and called a bomb or something, you know? So smart move by John Harbaugh on that play.
Absolutely. And you know what? After the game, too, we're going to talk about this interference or holding call at the end of the game. But when they showed the up in the booth, the parents of the Harbaugh boys. Now, how do you got a feel for these two? Because how do they be happy? Because one of their sons lost and the other one won.
Yeah.
You've got grandkids crying because Jim's team lost, and you've got John's kids happy because their dad won. And that had to be absolutely difficult for the parents. But you're sitting back and you've got your two sons coaching each other in the Super Bowl. You were a coach yourself. That's got to feel pretty damn good, huh?
Yeah. I don't think the parents were sad. They were proud of both of them. Because like we said, it was a great ball game. They didn't get blowed out. I mean, it came down to the last play, literally came down to the last play. Yes, you feel bad for Jim Harbaugh, but you got a feeling that he'll be back. He'll get it sooner or later. John Harbaugh has been on the cusp of the Super Bowl for so long, and he finally got there and he finally won it. So I think they feel better. They feel okay. They're proud of John and they're proud of Jim. I don't think it was that difficult because both of them are great coaches, and they know that Jim will get his one day, but John had the better team that night.
Yeah, that's fair enough, I guess. But my thought was, is that how do you be happy?
Well, yeah.
Who do you be happy for? Mom, he likes me. Dad likes him more than me. It still's going on 40 years later. Anyway, last call of the game. Interference or holding. And a lot of people went nuts over this, too. We talked about this already. That was, you know what, that was the best non-call of the entire football game. And I honestly felt that this football game was very well officiated, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. A lot of people talking about the holding, this, that, and the other. Let's go back to this. Let's go back earlier in the game. When you remember in the first half when it was a big skirmish and they was fighting, Kerry Williams got up and pushed the referee. He probably should have been ejected. But the referee didn't eject him. Okay, because why? It's the Super Bowl. You cannot leave the game. Do not. They will tell you this all the time. Do not leave the game in the official's hand. Go out and run it. We talked about it earlier. First off, Kaepernick pass was way out of bounds. So Crabtree wanted to call it anyway because Ed Reed hit him dead in the chest. And Crabtree, like we talked about earlier, ran the wrong route. Man, he tried to initiate contact because he wanted the back shoulder fade. But instead, he had a fade to the end zone. He wanted Kaepernick to put on his shoulder. But Kaepernick was getting hit. So he couldn't see all that. He didn't plant his feet. But when you initiate the contact, then he tried to get off the block and Jimmy Smith was falling down. It was a good no call, man. And I think what really got the referee, that the ball was thrown out of bounds. I think if the ball was thrown a little bit better, they may have thrown the flag. But since the ball was not catchable, it didn't matter. So, hey, it is what it is. They shouldn't even got bent down 28-6 in the first place.
That's exactly right. It's true. They shouldn't have been. It shouldn't have been in the referee's hands. And the referees didn't have to make that call, thank goodness. But they let this stuff go the whole night. Every single ball that was thrown in the air, you could have caught thrown a flag. But nobody wants to see yellow fever at a Super Bowl. No one wants to see that. I remember, I guess it was maybe, I don't remember who was playing, but they were throwing flags every other play. And these women that were at this party, as that were like, what does this mean? What does that mean? What are all those cute little flags doing out there? You know, I'm like, get out of here. I said, it's the referee's foolishness. That's what it is. But this was a fantastic game. And you know something? We got Ray Lewis. He walked out of there a champion. You know, we'll talk about that some other time because we have to get into the Atlanta Braves and we need to take a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Phil Nason Show on these amazing affiliates. We'll be right back.
Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit Phil Nason's .com.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It's February the 7th, 2013, and we are on the Skype line with Jamie and Smith from the sportsgoons.com. We just did a amazing, in case you missed it, football wrap-up of the Super Bowl. You'll be able to get the podcast of that at philipnasons.wordpress.com. That's with two L's, or philnasons.com under the tab Today's Phil Nason Show. There's a bunch of archives, a bunch of players, and you're all set. We were going to talk about the Atlanta Braves last week with Jamie, and we ran out of time. But Jamie, what in the world is going on with the Atlanta Braves? They have done a lot this winter, haven't they?
Yes, they have. I am thoroughly excited. We're going to talk about the Hawks, but my Hawks aren't doing a hill of beans right now. But the Braves, I can't wait for April 1st, opening day. They went out and signed B.J. Upton to a nice contract. They went out and traded for his brother, Justin Upton. We may have the best defensive outfield in all of baseball with Jason Hayward, B.J. Upton, and Justin Upton. Right now, on paper, the Braves, if not, have one of the best teams in all of the National League, probably of baseball, but not in the American League. But they have a legitimate shot of getting to the World Series. I cannot wait.
Well, they have a legitimate shot every year, really, but they did some work.
Yeah.
The Upton brothers, there's a lot of upside to having those two. And then you got Jason Hayward out there, right? That's your outfield right there, folks. Jason Hayward, B.J. Upton, and
Justin Upton.
I couldn't spit out his first name, brother. But anyhow, what an outfield. And then you know what else you have with his baseball team is you have Craig Kimbrell. Pardon me?
Oh, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, right. He is the closer, and he's back, and he could have been the MVP last year, really. That's a pretty good basis right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Craig Kimbrell, I think he's the best closer in baseball. You know, he gets in the game is over with. Also, our bullpen is going to shape up real good. Hopefully, Ventures can return back to his 2011 form and be that setup man. Because eighth, ninth inning. If the Braves are winning, you're done. You're not winning. You're not coming back. And that's the part of our strength. We traded Tommy Hansen. Tommy struggled. I mean, my goodness, Tommy struggled with the Braves last two seasons. He could not get out the first four innings, but we traded him. Our rotation is fine. We have a nice rotation. Tim Hudson, Medlin, Beachy, Paul Mahomes. I mean, we're stacked top to bottom from pitchings all the way to hitting. Now we just got to get Dan Uggla back on the same page. Maybe he can revert back to 2011 as well with his 31 home runs, 100 RBIs. Freddie Freeman is going to be a future All-Star. I mean, the guy is good. Well, he was the All-Star game last year. But the guy is a clutch hitter. We did trade Martin Prado. We did trade Prado. But at the same time, Frank Rent in the Justin Upton deal. But he did a good job of getting Chris Johnson in the deal with Justin Upton. So we now have a third baseman to platoon with Juan Francisco. So the third base should be okay. Andrew Tosemis is a lot of writers, a lot of baseball people got him as the best defensive shortstop in all of baseball. Man, let me tell you, the city of Atlanta has not seen a championship since 1995 in any sport. This year, we may see another one due to the Atlanta Braves, man. I am excited, man. I cannot wait to get to turn the field and watch these guys in person.
Yeah, I tell you what, they seem to have a pretty good thing. You know, that third base thing is going to be interesting, though, because really they don't want to see a platoon. They want to see an everyday guy like Chipper.
Yeah.
And Chris Johnson and Juan Francisco, you're going to give the bat to Chris Johnson. He has – last year he batted, I think, what, 286 or something, where Juan Francisco batted 234. Fielding percentage – and here's the thing. When you talk about your rotation, you're talking about ground ball baseball pitchers. Mm-hmm. And you're going to need a good defense behind you, especially a good third baseman. And both of these guys have 93% fielding percentages lifetime. This is a good thing for them. Now, you brought up Andrelton Simmons. Great, great young shortstop. You know, I hope his hamstrings are okay. Dan Uggla just had a little bit of a down year. I wouldn't worry about him so much. And Freddie Freeman, he may be a future All-Star, but he doesn't have to be on this team. What he needs to be is consistent and dependable, because there is no one else right now on the depth chart even close to taking or filling in for him if he goes down. Don't forget, you have one of the best catchers in baseball in Mr. McCann.
Yeah.
And you've got Gerald Laird as his backup.
Yeah. Well, McCann, he's hurt right now. He had a problem with his labrum last year. He had surgery, so he's going to miss probably the first couple of months of the season. But Gerald Laird was a great – Frank Wren, my goodness, man, why can't he be the GM for the Hawks? This guy makes deals and willing and dealing to make this team a competitive product when it comes to October. He knows Brian McCann, he better – this may be his last season in Atlanta, and how great Atlanta is. They got prospects that are coming up, man, who can fill that void. So – McCann, man, he's injured. If he go to the American League, which I think he will, he has to be a DH because I think his days as a catcher may be over with that shoulder problem. But I'm not really too much worried or concerned about that. We need to get off to a hot start. The Braves are known for getting off to slow starts and then heating up in the middle of the summertime. They didn't get off to a great fast start like the Nationals did last season. And I think they can win this division, man, if they get off to a pretty good start in the National League this season.
Yeah, they're in the tough National League East, and no one else did anything, really.
The Nationals got a couple of players. Well, but they traded the Braves killer. Michael Morse killed the Braves. I mean, he was the only guy I really feared on that team because it seemed like every time he got the hit, he was in the home run. But they traded him to Seattle, and I look at that lineup, I don't see anybody that really killed the Braves last year. Player really was the pitching staff, and it wasn't even Strasburg. It was Gio Gonzalez and Zimmerman, all those guys that were destroying the Braves. It wasn't Strasburg that was beating the Braves. So I'm glad to see Michael Morse not be with the Nationals.
Plus, the Nationals lost Edwin Jackson. That's a big loss. And who knows what's going to happen with Gio Gonzalez?
Oh yeah.
You really don't know, really. Honestly, yeah. You know what? They don't have to test positive anymore. If they can prove that you were involved in it, off you go. That would be a big loss for the Nationals. But this pitching staff, we've got a couple more minutes. This starting pitching staff, we've already talked about the bullpen a little bit. You've mentioned them, but I'm going to run down their top. This is the depth chart as of today. You got Medlin as the ace. He was, I think, 10-1 last year. You got Timmy Hudson, who was, what, 16-13 last year, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Minor, I can't remember what he did. Mahomes, he was okay, and Beachy was okay. And Terahan was the sixth guy. He's number six in the rotation, the sixth guy.
Mm-hmm.
Is Medlin the ace, or is Hudson really the ace?
I think Hudson still is the ace. I forgot what his record was last year, but he had a pretty good season. The thing about what the pitching is, they didn't get any real offensive help some of those games. I mean, the pitching was winning 1-0, 2-0, 3-2. You know what I'm saying? Now we got some right-handed bats, so I think that would help out the pitching a whole lot this season. The only pitcher, like I said earlier, that was really killed, Mike Minor struggled at the beginning, but he came on very strong towards the end of the season. But Tommy Hansen was the only one really that was giving up big runs at big times. Other times, it was a lack of scoring on our part. But as for like pitching wise, Tommy Hansen was the biggest culprit, you want to say, in the pitching staff. So I think the pitch staff will be fine, especially with the new adjustments in the lineup that will help them out.
Yeah, they should be. You know, Hansen was on my fantasy team last year, and I thought he did pretty well, actually, all things considered. But this is a good baseball team. The Nationals are going to be tough. The Phillies, who knows what they're going to come up with. The Mets, forget them. And the Marlins, I think they're going to get regulated to AAA next year because that is an awful baseball team down there.
I think, yeah.
Well, I'm predicting that the Atlanta Braves will win the National League East.
Me too.
Now, why not? I do it every year, really, so I might as well be consistent. I just hope they don't collapse. You know, the thing is with the Braves is they have this tendency to collapse.
That is so true. Glad we didn't last year, but the year before they hurt it. I wanted to cry. I wanted to cry like a baby. But we collapsed in the playoffs, though. That's the thing. So hopefully we don't have a collapse this year. So it's all good.
You want to win the East. You don't want a wild card. You don't want that second wild card, man.
No.
That's a one and done.
That's fool's gold.
That's fool's gold. That's exactly right. All right. Hey, I tell you what, great show with you tonight, man. Thank you so much for being here, Jamian.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Anytime.
You can find Jamian at thesportsgoons.com. And I want to thank you all for taking the time to listen to today's Phil Nason Show. Tomorrow, we're going to be doing a fantasy baseball special with knuckleballsblogs.com and talk to contact podcast. Eric Pleiss, and we're going to do Fantasy Baseball 101. You'll want to stick around for that. I want to thank each and every one of you for subscribing on iTunes. Thank you so much for visiting our local affiliates. We have a big announcement coming up. I might as well tell you, I mentioned this the other day that we were working toward getting a live show for you, and we took that step today. We did a test run, and it worked out pretty well. So in a couple weeks, look for it. But tomorrow night, you're going to really enjoy that fantasy baseball show, I promise. Until then, you all take care of yourselves out there. Be good to one another. Good night. And most importantly, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.